I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Hello, everyone. Hello, dear. Welcome back to the studio.
Yeah.
I had a question to start this one off. Listeners can probably tell the two of us have been going through all the current Star Treks in release order.
Oh, can they?
We keep mentioning Discovery every once in a while.
We? Okay.
Yeah, I didn't remember that. I think Lower Decks has come up in conversation.
Okay. Have we talked about Strange New Worlds?
Maybe? We should. That's the best one.
It's the best.
It's the best one.
It's absolutely the best Star Trek ever made.
we'll see how we feel about that once it has like five seasons, you know?
But right now. Strong first two seasons. Definitely in the lead.
But I bring this up to say that recently we concluded Star Trek Picard, the worst one.
Yep. My God. The worst.
Which brings us to the question I meant to ask. What would the legacy sequel of SeaQuest look like? What is the Picard equivalent of SeaQuest DSV?
If they made it really bad?
I would hope they made it really well, but like the idea is it's been 30 years or whatever. One disadvantage SeaQuest has to doing the same with Star Trek The Next Generation, more of the cast has died.
I was gonna say, like, if we aren't just counting like season three because there is a time jump, how do we do this because a lot of people died?
Bridger and Lucas not appearing in this television show.
I feel like the only option is it has to be focused on Ford.
Right? It's Captain Ford.
It's Captain Ford or like Admiral Ford or something. Yeah. And like, ooh, it could just be about Captain Ford. And Krieg. I'm not going to go farther into that. Just leaving it there.
Well, yeah.
Because things.
We're going to draw the lines and leave it to our creative partners to color them in.
I have thoughts, but I can't share them right now.
Oh, why? Oh, does it rely on season three things?
Yes.
Okay.
Spoilers. Cannot talk about right now. But I have opinions. I have reasons.
I think there's a brand new ship. I don't think it's all nostalgia-driven. We're going to bring the SeaQuest out of mothballs.
Well, especially with... You can't... By the time season three ends, where the world is not the world that, like, season one is based in.
Right.
So...
But even beyond that, like, if the SeaQuest is 25 years ahead, technology-wise, of where it aired... I would like to imagine, like, yeah, what is 30 years beyond that or so, right?
Okay, yeah.
There's definitely a new HR probe, but it's like, it's an octopus. It has tentacles instead of being a water jaguar.
Yeah. And it glows. It leaves a trail of glowiness.
Oh, yeah. Glowy trail.
Krieg light.
So yeah, I can see the inciting incident gets Admiral Ford out of New Cape Quest and back into the ocean.
Yeah.
And he has to assemble a crew, and the first guy he picks out is like
Tony.
Merchant Marine sub Lieutenant Krieg. Just like snatching him out of obscurity.
It's like Krieg. And Tony, and he's like, oh, fucking God. What am I doing? God damn it, this is going to be awful. No, they got his back. They're gonna do it.
How do you think they treat characters whose actors have passed away? Wes Phelan, Crocker, can't appear.
So Bridger and Wes Phelan have finally gotten married and are off doing science-y shit. In places, right? Lucas is also very successful, too busy doing science.
He's just too busy.
With dolphins.
Okay.
Okay, right? Like, they're solving the world's problems. They're too busy.
I imagine that if any of the cast members played by now deceased actors come up, they let the characters also be dead, except Lucas. I think Lucas gets the Brian O'Connor treatment. and we're just letting him be.
He just bees. Maybe it's Bridger is that Bridger and Wes Phelan did get together, but he has since passed away.
Right, right.
Type thing. But yeah, Lucas is just out there forever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just forever. Having a great time with Darwin, because Darwin also cannot also, die.
Yes. I don't know how long dolphins live, but Darwin is a special one.
And they're having a great time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Darwin has a granddaughter who is on the new ship.
Oh, God. Someone's going to make some fucking, like, montage of, like, Lucas clips and Darwin with the song.
the Sarah McLachlan song?
No.
Oh, okay.
With the...
Oh, the Brian See You Again song.
Yeah, See You Again song. Okay. And then I'm going to, like, fucking cry again. Because... Jesus, I cannot handle that scene. I'm so glad they did it, but like, I can't. I can't handle it. I bawl like a baby every single fucking time.
In this show we're putting together,
mm-hmm.
do you think it follows on the political situation from the end of season three, or is the world state totally new again?
I don't think it follows exactly. I think you see, I mean, if the show's taking place like a decade or whatever down the line, right? Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. the world's evolved more. You're
okay.
building off of wherever it was.
Sure, sure. So
it's again a new version of the world.
Maybe some names in common, but the situation, clean slate for whatever adventures we're doing.
I don't want to say clean slate
because
okay. things are gonna develop.
Sure.
From whatever.
Sure.
Right? Like, there's going to be political things mm-hmm. that are still held over. But then certain things have changed, too.
Sure. There is a UEO.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, the UEO has evolved through all of this. All three seasons. Very evolved.
True.
So it can keep evolving.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Does that mean it's focused more on combat and war, or are they trying to go back to more of a research
mm-hmm,
aspect,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that's for them to decide. Maybe that's the battle, is that they're like, hey, the world's finally taken a turn and we can go back
yeah,
to being research yeah. focused. And it's the battle of trying to keep that equilibrium that allows it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One thing I would be interested in seeing is, like, Captain Ford really having to face the absent legacy of Bridger.
Mm.
And, like, how can he come out of Bridger's shadow when he's in his same chair in the new boat?
Let me tell you, he needs to make friends with everyone. So anytime there's an episode, he can be like, I knew this guy!
Yeah.
What? We drank together back in the day. We went to the ballet together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, what characters would you want to come back? Does the Regulator come back? Does the Regulator's kid have a job on the boat?
I so want the Regulator to come back.
How about Caesar Teslov? Is Caesar Teslov now a peace-threatening dictator like his father before him?
Ford has to interact with his son.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whether Tony's back or not, which I do hope Tony's back,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's now having to interact with Angie, Tony's
cousin.
She's joined the UEO. She's now coming aboard.
She's the new doctor, because the doctor's always a woman.
Yeah.
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 So I also like the idea of visiting Tony Piccolo as a responsible person,
mm-hmm.
like with responsibilities, mm-hmm. with position and authority.
Yeah.
Like, authority figure Tony Piccolo would be a wild place to re-meet him in his life.
He's the new Crocker. He loves a good sea shanty.
He does. And you cannot
passes the wisdom on of the myths and legends of the sea.
And you can't get anything by him because he invented those tricks as a young man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, something.
I know what you're doing.
We need Piccolo back in Sequest Legacy.
And he allows poker games to happen as long as he gets a cut.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, let us talk about the Sequest that actually was.
Okay.
with season 2, episode 8, When We Dead Awaken. This is written by Clifton Campbell, who previously wrote The Fear That Follows, The Return of the Aliens.
Uh-huh.
And directed by Annette Heywood Carter. She got this job from when Steven Spielberg watched her short film, The Foot Shooting Party, starring a young Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh.
Her first feature film was Foxfire, where she helped discover Angelina Jolie.
Oh, wow.
A quote from Annette Heywood Carter, quote, "Back then, I was working mostly as a script supervisor, which was the only position behind the camera that hired women. Literally, the only one."
Jesus.
So this is her first TV, I think, at all. As director, at least.
Yeah. I do feel like with an episode name like that, there should be, like...
Zombies?
I was going to say sea shanties about ghosts.
Sure.
I need someone to spit on the floor.
You would like it to be spookier than it is.
Yes.
With the title, sounds, When We Dead Awaken.
It sounds like it should be spooky.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
It's really not.
It's really not.
It's an espionage thriller. There's a cover-up.
Spoilers.
I'm laying expectations for the genre mode. I don't think that's spoilers.
Spoilers. I think it's spoilers.
Well, here's the least spoilery thing. The establishing shot. It is an exterior of the Enos Levine Institute of Cryogenics.
Not a trench. Yeah, so we're at a cryogenics place, and we get a lot of establishing shots of cryo tubes, cryo banks, cryo beds, pods, cryopods.
These cryopods. Big, chunky, cylindrical pods, rows and rows of them that when we get a straight down shot, they just disappear into infinity. There's so many.
They look like they should hold energy from laughs.
Yeah. If you just paint them bright yellow.
If you made live action Monsters, Inc., Disney would suck all the color out of it and make it look like these.
Well, they're about to make live action Monsters, Inc. in a sense, and that's why the Muppets have to die.
Fuck you, Disney. So there's a lady who's checking the pods, and she's like, huh, this is weird. This one shut down 3 days ago.
That's a problem, especially because as this goes on, we hear about how the tissue degrades after 2 days.
Yeah.
And she's, like, pitying the person who has to hose down the people's sludge inside.
Gross!
It's so gross!
And they're trying to, like, figure out who was inside, but, like, well, she can see, like, the date the person was put into the pod, which was October 10th, 1999.
1 day before the 6 billionth person was added to the human population of Earth.
They can't find the name. Mm-hmm. And when the doctor guy that she's talking to tries to, like, look it up, he needs UEO clearance, which he has.
In his glass brick office.
Yes.
We are in the era of glass brick. There is so much in
this
episode.
There is so much damn glue. Which makes me think, wow, they filmed all of this in one building.
Yeah, maybe.
Because they just, like, refurnished everything.
This guy's office might be the... hospital room later. Oh, I'm sorry, spoiler. There's a hospital room in this episode.
It's fine. So he has quite the shocked look on his face when he sees who's in there, and he tells this woman to open it, you know, the pod that probably has human sludge. And she's like, what? I don't want to. He's like, do it.
So she does, and there's no sludge in there. In fact, there's nothing in there. It's empty. People can just wake up and leave this place?
Apparently.
You don't gotta sign out or anything?
Well, the next scene is this dude talking to this patient's doctor who's like, well, I didn't need anyone's permission to let her out.
Yeah, it's my patient. I do what I want.
And she wanted to be let out, so I did. And the dude's like, you actually did need my signature. And he's like, I don't fucking care.
This doctor, like, this person's, I guess, family doctor, really hates cryonics.
Yes.
Just
but you know what?
Finds it an abomination against ethics and the medical sciences.
But here's the thing. He's a doctor. So he's gonna do what the patient needs. Doesn't matter what his beliefs are and that he doesn't believe in cryogenics. He's gonna fucking treat the person with cryogenics if that's what they want.
And then wake them up on a predetermined date. Regulations be damned.
It's a little lesson, though, about, like, medical care and how, like, I don't know, you shouldn't let your personal beliefs dictate care. Just gonna say. But things don't go well for this guy because
he's going to get a front row seat to that, branch of medical science he hates.
He gets knocked out and shoved in the pod and then frozen.
And that is our cliffhanger out of the cold open into the theme song. And just think about this person wandering the earth who watched American Beauty and thought, fuck it, I can't be here anymore, and climbed into a cryopod.
You know?
Oh, I love when they give exact dates so I can look up what really happened.
Well, I'm just over here like, I don't know if you're really just worried about Y2K. Climbing into a cryopod that's like operated by computers is probably not your best bet.
It seems really reliant on the grid you're so worried about, yeah.
Like, maybe not the best escape method. So, after credits, we come to some lovely night shots of Florida.
Yes, and Lucas is at the bar getting a blended juice drink.
It's very pastel-y.
Yeah.
And he's all like, where's my strawberry? Bartender's like, they're out of season. And he's like, bullshit, we got hydroponics now.
Everything's in season all the time. What are you talking about?
And the dude's like, fuck you. And he's like, okay, fine. Can I have a beer? And he's like, no, you're a child. And he's like, dudes, come on. Tell the bartender I should have a beer. And Tony and Tim are like, no.
Tony Piccolo is chewing one of them red plastic straws like he is a cow out in the fields.
Yes. But they are all out because it is Brody's birthday and they took him out to buy him a beer, but Brody has ditched them to talk with a girl.
He's with a lady.
Which Lucas is very like, I can't believe this girl is talking to him. Like, don't all the girls like know Brody shit by now? And
the bartender, very chatty guy, is like, oh yeah, she's new.
She doesn't know this yet.
She's been coming here every night, sitting alone in the corner and shooing away every man who offers to buy her a drink until now. Ooh, this dreamy blonde lieutenant finally cracked the code.
Bartender's like, hey, mysterious dude at the bar, you want another one? And he's like, no, I want your finfo. It's like, odd. Wonder what you're going to be up to.
There's a lot of dancing at this bar. There's much more dancing than any bar I've ever been to.
Yeah, so the girl, like, after hearing all about Brody's job, is like, let's go dance. And as they are dancing...
When we go out, it's usually a hockey on the TV kind of bar, not a constantly dancing in the walkways bar.
Yeah, like, the only place we've gone to is, like, that... one restaurant down the street that has like the supposed to have karaoke and salsa dancing, and they never have when we're there.
Never in the hours we've been. No,
I don't think we go late enough. That's maybe that's our problem. Maybe. Is we don't go out at the late times that people would be dancing.
Sure.
We also just don't go to places that have dancing. That is the only place I can think of. Nowhere else has enough room. We go to places that are pretty cramped.
This place doesn't have enough room. Like, you can't, like, get to your table back from the bar. You're tripping over somebody sambaing. But yes, Brody has been opening his heart and his entire personal and career history to this mysterious woman.
Yes. The boys are like, fuck this. We're gonna be late. Give me the keys, Brody. We're not going AWOL. You figure out how to get back to the boat yourself.
Piccolo pickpockets him and is like, hey, we gotta get back. So he's like, yeah, I guess I gotta get back.
But he's like, hey, like, the boys are gonna, like, give me such a hard time if, like, I don't get a kiss.
What a line! What a line! And so she leans in and gives him a very chaste peck on the cheek in her trad wife modesty dress.
Yeah, and then Brody's like, oh, well, let me give you a lift. And she's like, oh, well, fine, I guess. I'm going to go to the bathroom first. And he's like, oh, okay.
That makes sense. You should use the bathroom before you leave. Otherwise, you're going to be in your car 2 blocks later thinking, I really should use the bathroom.
Not even 2 blocks. You're going to be out the door, but you can't go back in.
Yes, you can.
No, you can't.
Yes,
no,
you can. Can.
No, you can't.
Darling, you have to take care of yourself. Be nice to yourself.
Just because I don't realize I have to pee as we leave, and then we get outside and I'm like, you know, I have to pee, doesn't mean I'm going back inside. I will get home. Thank you. But also, the girl's using this as her escape method.
Sure, sure.
She's like, no, gonna go in this cab that was just mysteriously waiting outside, perfectly fine.
Well, it's like last call of the bar, great time to be a cab.
It's not last call.
It's bedtime for some people.
Just for the Navy dudes.
Still a good time for a cab to be around.
So, Tim likes to point out, however, that Brody's date is gone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, she's totally, like, wants you to drive her home,
well,
dude.
He's had that move pulled on him a number of times.
Yes. Back at the boat, as they're getting on, Ford's like, what the fuck, dudes? You're late! And, like, rips into them, and mm-hmm, as they're all like, fuck, he's like, it's fine. We have to actually wait for a launch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so then Brody's like, great, I'm going to go stalk the girl. What was the cab number?
I'm going to go find that lady and do a sex on her. Aw, yeah.
So he goes back to the dock,
mm-hmm,
where she apparently got in the cab, went around the block, and came back, and is now sitting at the basically deserted dock.
Yeah, I guess it alone. Was. I guess it was last call. Bartender's not there. Nobody's there. Just her and video phone guy.
And Brody's just like, I'm going to stare at you for a while and then approach you very silently and sit uh-huh behind you while you're alone on this dock. Brody.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck, dude?
We know Brody has issues with consent.
He's just fucking clueless in this one. Like, his other issues with consent have always been like, whoa, dude. This time I'm just like, are you dumb? Are you just dumb? I'm going with he's just dumb.
Sure, sure. So he is following this unnamed woman, pleading for another chance, for some answers. What's the matter? Do I smell bad? And she's like, you smell nice. And he says, well, that's something we can build on. I smell nice.
So as he's talking about how he smells, we cut to mysterious vidphone dude putting together a gun.
Yes, yes, out of like 8 parts. So we keep going back to this guy over and over again, building tension as they continue to speak. And Brody just shouts, marry me.
And then he's like, you know, I'm sorry. I'm like new at this. You're my first obsession.
Oh boy, he's got every line. He's written, dude, a book of lines.
No girl wants to hear that until, like, ever.
It's okay. I don't usually stalk women. You
I only, like, went technically AWOL, even though I was supposed to be back on duty, to, like, come find you and, like, stalk around the dock, like, I don't know, maybe to catch your scent or see the cab. And then I was going to, like, follow you home because I'm obsessed with you. You want to
it's a good
smell me?
It's a good thing I smell nice because I was rooting around in your garbage for a while just for, you know, some hints about what you like.
What the fuck, dude?
What brand of coffee you drink? Excuse me, we don't have that anymore. No one can afford home coffee.
In the show, they, like, make fun of, like, Lucas's game, mm-hmm, Tim's game.
Absolutely none.
Which he has none. But I'm like, what the fuck, Brody? What the fuck? She walks away from him. And then
yeah, you think?
He's distracted by a mother and child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And suddenly he gets, like, spider sense and sees Mr. Vidphone Man with a gun and runs and tackles the woman behind a pillar as shots ring out.
Yes, yes. So he makes sure she's okay and he runs after this guy. They find each other under a bridge. There's a short fight where Brody loses. He gets beat.
Yes. And then Vidphone Dude, like, leaps into a boat.
Yes, he just does this running leap, like, knees together hop into his getaway boat.
And just flies off. And so Brody rushes back to the woman who's like, oh my god, I had no right. I shouldn't have come back. I had no right. And he's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, it's me, Jimmy. My little man. He's like, Mom?
That's right. Sequest has at least two episodes about crew members wanting to bang their mom. Marry me, Mommy. I want to smell your hair, Mommy.
At least in the other one.
Make out with me, Mommy.
Tony's mom didn't, like, have a really creepy line of, my little man. I hate it. I hate it so much. I'm like, I don't care. Whatever the story is that you're going to find out about shortly with this, stop calling him your little man. It's fucking weird. Back on the Sequest, Bridger is talking to General Frank Dude. And it's Frank's fault that they're being held up waiting for this launch to come with some scientists.
Yes, they are ferrying scientists.
Like
the good old days.
And he's like, you know, if you, like, take the blame for, like, things being late, I'll get you extra, like, research funding. Occasionally you still do science shit.
We're swapping favors, and Bridger's like, that's bribery! And General Frank's like, no, it's favors. Come on, man.
Yeah. And so those scientists eventually show up with a whole lot of shit.
There's a whole thing about a giant immobile crate that Dagwood just lifts handily without any effort.
Yeah.
And there are three scientists who we meet very briefly.
Very briefly. Very quickly. There's like a woman and two dudes.
And that's all there is to say about
that's
that.
It. That's it. So Brody has, snuck his mom on board.
Yes. Brody, for some reason, did not say, hey, Captain, someone is trying to kill my cryogenically unfrozen mother. He just says nothing and smuggles a woman aboard.
And decides, hey, you should take a shower while I try to get a DNA match on the blood on this shirt.
From the fight with the assassin under the bridge.
Yes.
Yes.
And we're not going to tell anyone anything.
No.
But she is going to inform him
mm-hmm.
about what's going on with her.
Yes. She had an incurable virus of some name. Did you write down the name?
No.
It's not important. An incurable made-up virus that she went on ice for to wait for it to be cured, right?
Yes.
That's the promise of cryonics. That is the point. But she wanted to wake up now before it's too late. She wanted to meet her little man in the prime of life.
Yes. Which Brody thought she was dead.
Mm-hmm,
he was raised by his grandparents because there wasn't a dad.
Right.
He was a sperm bank baby.
Yes.
Raised by the grandparents who have now since passed away.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't remember much of anything about why someone would want to kill her.
Right. This is a shock to her as well.
Yes. And he's like, okay, well, we'll figure it out. You go shower in the communal showers, because apparently I, as an officer, do not have my own shower. She goes to do that, as Brody goes to drop off some bloody fabric to Tim, to be like, hey, you know that woman I met last night? And he's like, and stalked? Yeah, she's in my cabin, and someone tried to kill her. Help.
So O'Neill does the DNA testing. The languages guy does the DNA testing.
Apparently.
Not the doctor / head of the science department?
No.
Okay.
Or Lucas, who sometimes knows how to use the shit. depending on the episode.
Also, he couldn't use scissors. Like, he tears this scrap of fabric with his bare hands.
Brody's a dude that wouldn't have scissors. I don't know. That's a dude that's like, I will open this beer bottle with my teeth. So while he's doing that, his mom goes to the communal showers.
Yes. Have we mentioned how remarkably hot Brody's mom is?
No.
Like, there was one thing they cast for with this lady. She's a perfectly fine actor as well, but...
Let's find very much a 1994, like, bra model.
Yes.
This is a woman who would, like, model in the Sears catalog underwear.
Again, she makes that Tradwife modesty dress look amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now it's time for nude scenes. Like, network broadcast safe nude scenes.
Yes.
A lot of they're clearly wearing strapless bras shot from, like, the sternum up. But yeah. Oh boy. Mm. The imagination gets away with you.
We're going to the shower, so wet. Maybe. So she starts hitting buttons, and she's very confused when nothing's happening. And the woman next to her is like, hey, save some ions for others.
Yeah. It's an ionic shower. Just blasts you with invisible ions.
That apparently make you clean. And so Henderson has to come around and be like...
Nude.
Yeah, she just got out of her own wet shower and is like, oh, I understand. Sometimes I like to take a real one, too. And then, like, introduces herself as, like, you know, Lonnie Henderson from Nebraska or wherever the fuck she's from. And so that makes his mom also be like, whatever her first name is, Brody from Ohio or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, Brody, any relation? Awkward as fuck.
She does not answer. And so Henderson just leans over into her shower cubicle, peeping on Brody's mom. I don't know what y'all do in these situations, but this seems like invasive to me.
So here's my thing, too. Is these shower stalls.
Yeah.
This is giving me, like, flashbacks to those bathrooms we used in Central Park. Do you remember when I came out and I was like, holy fuck. Okay, I am on the taller side.
Sure.
Of taller average.
Within a standard deviation. Yes. But yeah.
I am not an incredibly tall woman.
No.
But I am on the taller end of the average woman's height.
Sure.
I am around 5'9"-ish. Like, it's not, like, insane, but the majority of my friends are all, like, 5'4".
Right.
Okay, I feel like a fucking giant next to them.
Hi, Nora, I love you.
There was this bathroom we went into in Central Park. It was by the fountain, by that big Angels in America fountain.
But by the big filmed in everything fountain.
Yeah, but yeah. Angels in America.
Sure.
Okay.
The John Wick fountain.
I had to keep my eyes closed. Because the bathroom cubicle door height was like my chest. If I didn't keep my eyes closed, I could have looked into every fucking stall. Okay? There was no way that I was not going to see something. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, I shouldn't be standing up, pulling up my pants, being able to look directly in anyone else's eyeballs. Fucking weird. Okay, and so these shower stalls... remind me of that. You can look over at any of your neighbors and talk to them and very much see their boobs. Very much see anything else. What the fuck?
But yes, there are options. Do you want to be naked and wet or naked and dry? There are two kinds of shower available to you.
Apparently, you need, like, a ration code to get the water.
Yes,
you know, the water.
You get a water allowance.
On this submarine that's surrounded by water.
Well, fresh water stores are limited.
I feel like they would have, you know, filters.
They'd have, like, a desalination plant somewhere. Yeah, maybe.
Yes,
maybe.
They would. If you have that big of a crew.
If it's that this, futuristic.
If yeah. it's that futuristic, this big of a crew, and from all the shit they say about how long the Sequest can stay underwater without mm-hmm. support.
Right.
They need to have water filtration.
That would mean potable water, yes.
Yes. So either they need to be able to continuously process their wastewater.
Right. They've got a water recycling plant in the ship.
And or they need to also be able to filter seawater.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I'm on your side. Yeah. Yes. They should have unlimited showers except in emergency situations.
Yeah. So anyways, Henderson totally fucking checks out Brody's mom. Definitely is so is
everyone else.
Mm, okay. Mm, interesting choices.
She's watching O'Neill flash his panties around, too. She's gonna knifeful everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, she is. And so turns on the water for her, heads out, and...
And we cut away from our shower scene for swimsuit frolicking memories.
But, with, the worst Instagram filters on top of it, How grainy and fucked up can we make this flashback?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where she runs out. Okay, so she's having this flashback. And after, she showers for a little while, it becomes too much. And she, grabs her robe, runs out back to Brody's room.
A flashback.
Which is luckily, across the fucking hall.
It's her and her equally hot college friend frolicking down at the swimming hole.
And she's yelling, the river, the river. And I'm like, that wasn't a river. That was a fucking swamp you were in. All the imagery of this swimming hole is definitely, that is a place in Florida that has alligators. You will die. What the fuck were you swimming in there for?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was a swamp. There was, water around the trees. There wasn't, trees on the bank. It was a swamp.
Yeah, yeah. The costumes are... athletic one-piece swimsuits for hot babes.
Mm-hmm.
And the
Baywatch style.
And the setting looks like banjos should be playing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We're going down to the bayou.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna get sung to by a gator.
Watch out for the gators. As soon as they stop singing, they start eating.
Yeah.
So count your toes.
Yeah.
So Brody is comforting his wet nude mother.
Yes.
In his room.
As Ford passes by the open door, hold up, Brody! The
open door! Brody, you are so bad at human smuggling. Thank goodness. I don't want him to be better at it, I guess.
Ford's like, dude, opposite gender in your quarters, not okay.
Not okay.
Not okay.
And his response is, but Ford, she's not a non-com, she's my mother.
And then she faints.
And then she faints. I love that we cut straight to Captain Bridger, skipping over the situation being explained to him, and it just starts with him looking so over this bullshit as soon as he hears about it.
What the fuck, dude?
What is this nonsense you're bringing before me?
Brody's, going off about how, she has no idea who wants to kill her.
Mm-hmm,
all
mm-hmm.
she remembers is swimming with a friend when she got the virus. They got Lucas, trying to see if this friend is still alive, I guess.
Lucas is drumming through the internet to try and find her, is the quote.
Wendy comes in to give an update about his mom, that mm-hmm, she's okay. Mm-hmm. She's under anesthesia right now.
And so the choice Brody is put with for how to deal with his mother, she can go back on ice and be...
maybe revived later and saved.
Indefinitely held that way, or she can face this deadly virus.
Yes.
And reminds Brody that he needs to eat regular meals, even while his mother is having this health crisis.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I love you.
I love you too.
What a one to come back on. I'm so sorry.
What?
What an episode to be your first one back. I'm so sorry.
I knew what episode was waiting for us, and I was just like, okay, fuck. Well, I don't know. At least I can't be like, oh man, I was trying to hit on my hot mom. Anyways.
Anyway.
Enough about that. He leaves. promising to go do that. And Wendy says some shit that she always does about how, like, oh, I wonder if she was always this strong, or if in the deep sleep, the soul marches on. And Bridger just looks at her like, seriously, what the fuck?
To think I wanted to bang you because of your hot mom.
Dodged a bullet there!
Why is Sequest the hot mom show?
It's a great question. It's a great question. What next hot mom are we going to get? Like, what options did they not get to?
Someone on the Gelf Project, there could be a hot lady.
Yeah.
Dagwood could have a hot mom.
In one of the episodes that was supposed to be made for season 3 that never got made, Lucas's mom was supposed to appear.
How hot would she have been in season 3?
I don't know. Just saying.
I just enjoy that we've had two different ways of de-aging moms to make them more hot. And that's what I want to know. How many more ways can we turn back the clock? A genie.
A genie.
A mystical djinn.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, we can't leave this in because spoilers. Hot grandma.
Hot grandma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Wendy just spews shit. And this is why I hate this woman. Because I'm just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
If the only expertise the show gives you is as a psychic and not as a medical professional or a scientific researcher, then you're gonna inject weird, like, psychic shit. It's the one avenue open to her.
I hate her. So Ford goes to Brody, and finds, him sitting by his mom's bedside and is like, hey, the doctor told you to eat. And Brody holds up a red delicious apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, dude, you picked literally the worst thing.
It's better in the Sequest future.
It better be. They better have like genetically modified the shit out of that thing.
They bred the taste back into it after years of degradation. Yeah.
Blandest fucking apple ever. Thickest skin. It's gross.
We've done applerankings.com on this show. We can't do that again on this show.
I think we did. It's bad. But Ford is comforting him that he knows it's, you know, his hot mom and not a girl that he snuck on board. He can be a voice of comfort.
He can, you know, Brody never grew up with a dad. Ford can be that dad.
Can be his dad.
Ford can be his daddy now.
Now, what kills me is Brody has a line in this scene where he's talking about how, like, he grew up without a dad and, like, my mom looks like she's 12 years old and I'm just over here, she looks fucking 12 years old! Why the fuck are you hitting on her? If you think she looks that fucking young, dude, what the fuck are you doing? She does not look 12 years old, but what the fuck?
I think the guys from the ship would be really creeped out if you got a kiss from her in that case. It's the opposite of the thing you said.
Brody also calls Ford John in this scene. Not Jonathan. John.
John?
He's like, he says something, like, whatever he says, it's like, I don't know what to do, John.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ugh.
Don't like it.
He's not
don't
a
like
John.
That.
He's a Jonathan.
He's Jonathan to the captain, and he's Ford to everyone else on Earth.
Yes.
I hope his own suspiciously hot young mother calls him Ford.
Ortiz's mom is definitely hot.
Well, yeah, but she looks her age and hot.
Yes.
Yes.
But if there's going to be a hot mom, it's Ortiz's.
Anyhow, meanwhile.
His grandma. Also aged very nicely.
Sure, sure.
Yes. I believe in very strong genes in that family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tight ones, too.
Obviously.
So elsewhere on the boat, there's a B-plot, right? There's these scientists that were given a lift?
Yeah. So Lucas is, like, doing stuff with Darwin for the scientists.
And the science lady is in her swimsuit. She gets out of the moon pool. She's been swimming with the dolphin. You know what that means? I think she's about to date Bridger. That's how it goes.
one of the other guys is there too, Dr. Mm-hmm. Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucas is like, oh, hey, like Dr. Hopkins, you know, whatever happened to that conductor program? My friend really wants to get involved.
Wolfman?
Maybe. And Dr. Hopkins is like, oh yeah, it's up and running again. Tell him he should reapply, and walks away. And Lucas just stares. And like Henderson's like, what's going on? He's like, it can't be back up and going. It never started.
Bum, bum, bum. So,
And then Darwin. Is like, man not honest. Man wants to hurt.
The thing about Darwin is you have to do it in the squeaky voice, because otherwise he just sounds like Tonto.
Man not honest. Man want to hurt. I can't do his voice.
Is Lucas's internex handle Frankenstein? Because that's kind of how Darwin talks.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this discrepancy and a poor character review from Darwin gets them to immediately launch a manhunt for this so-called scientist.
Who they find injecting something into Hot Mom's IV.
Yes, doing health sabotage on Hot Mom.
And Ortiz and Tony pop into the door with laser guns.
And so he, like, flicks his wrist and he has a spring-loaded pistol in there like an evil cowboy.
Yes. And he goes running out another door and runs into Lucas and grabs him as a hostage. And then drags him into the launch and throws him down into there. But you know who's in there? Dagwood.
Mopping, vacuuming,
whatever. And Lucas jumps behind Dagwood immediately. And Dagwood is like, this is fine. What the fuck are you doing to my friend?
They exchange some words, and wouldn't you know it, this fake science assassin doesn't have a high opinion of Gelfs.
No. Dagwood throws him back up the launch. into the hands of, you know, everyone waiting to capture him.
With their little laser pistols. I believe this is the first appearance of the little laser pistols.
I think it might be.
It's their last appearance in this episode, but these props will recur.
Mm-hmm. Should I make us laser pistols in case we, like, use our costumes again?
Sure.
Then we have to get, like, I don't know, the zip tie or whatever.
Yeah. We can go harass Ted Raimi in costume next. Yeah.
Just get like some water guns and then like paper mache them.
He's a Midwestern boy. He could be around. So on the other end of the commercial.
Yes.
This would-be assassin is held behind some glowing green lines that are just nylon ropes that are phosphorescent green to look like an energy cage.
Yes. And
some individual shots weren't meant to be on Blu-ray. That's all there is to say about that.
They didn't know about high definition like this.
They didn't know
back in 1994. The dude is like, I don't know who hired me. It's not my job to know. What the fuck you gonna do? You gotta, like, give me my rights and shit. I'm not worried. And, like, Wendy's trying to probe around in his brain. He's like, I also know she's trying to poke in my brain. And she's like, it's true. Also, he doesn't know shit.
They try to run this guy's DNA. They're still running the DNA on the shirt. And they can't find anything because they both took plasma additives to mask their DNA signature.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is a cool sci-fi idea for a crime story.
Yeah.
Like, this belongs in an episode of Fringe.
Yeah.
There's a lot of this that belongs in Fringe, actually. Yeah. Some of it actually was in Fringe.
Some of it was. But, yeah, this whole idea of, you know, throwing off your DNA.
Yeah.
So it can't be traced to you. Very cool.
You give your assassin some sort of injection so that, yeah, that's cool. That's fun.
So they're like, I guess, like, our only option now is we gotta scan your mom's brain.
Yeah.
We gotta put our psychic to use. But to do this, we're going to put, like a little computer chip on a Band-Aid on the psychic's head that's going to go to Lucas's computer. Uh-huh. And he gets to watch the dreams like movies.
Mm-hmm.
Very bad movies. Movies that would be on like, you know, your cell phone from 1997.
Yeah, it looks like it was shot on the Game Boy camera little bit, for sure, for sure.
Or when the Game Boy had the little, like, you could, like, print your photos. Yeah. That's what this shit looks like.
The Game Boy printer.
Fuck.
But she is, Mama Brody is overwhelmed by all of this. And, like, she went on ice in 1999 before the future started, right?
Yes.
She wakes up and suddenly there's a UEO.
Yeah.
Suddenly there's a ban on commercial beef farming. There's brain scans. This is a foreign world to her.
You know, if she woke up and was like, man, I really want a burger, Krieg would have made it happen. Morale officer.
Krieg gets one look at this lady, he'd want to make a lot of things happen. He's a single fella.
Krieg would have made so many comments. Pretty sure Brody would have punched him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They do this brain scan
where
Wendy's seen what she's seen, and then the computer that Lucas has is seeing what Wendy's seen. And it's the swamp and a tire swing and the friends in their swimsuits.
Getting wasted with her gal pal, but then there is a spooky man. There's a man.
And the friend collapses in the water, definitely dead. And she freaks out, yelling like, don't look in his eyes! Don't look in his eyes! Like, he didn't fucking kill her with his eyes. Like, I don't get that.
She's traumatized!
He didn't have laser eyes! Like, I don't... and Lucas is left on the screen with a very pixelated, like, one-third of this dude's face.
He's got to find a way to turn this into usable intelligence.
Yes. And so Bridger's busy talking to the general dude who's like, you can't run illegal investigations. And Bridger's like, well, I can't have killers on my boat.
General Frank is very grumpy about the flagship of his Navy just doing cop stuff. I guess NCIS doesn't exist in this version of 2019.
Well, they're not in Miami.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? They often are.
Not right now.
Sure, sure. They're not right now.
Clearwater.
Okay. They're in Tampa. They're on the other side.
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't have an NCIS over there. the general's like, okay, fine. You can transport her to a UEO safe house, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She gets airlifted away in a helicopter. There's a lot of helicopter in this episode.
There is. And so Brody goes with her, and Lucas is left on the Sequest to mess with this image. He has been messing with it for a long time, trying to clear it up. Tony comes, bringing him a half-eaten hot dog for nourishment.
Yes. And they have a discussion
about how
Lucas is into hitting on hot moms of his crewmates. So they remember. They know it's a trend. There's no deniability here.
Lucas says something about, like, you know, for a guy who had his mom hit on, like, you think you'd have more compassion. And he's like, well, as the friend of the, you know,
As my friend who did the hitting on. He's like, well, I wouldn't call it hitting on exactly. More ogling and fantasizing very clearly.
I mean, I kind of like that they have the joke because at least they are aware. But also, it's good that, like, Tony can joke, move on, you know.
Sure, sure.
Process that trauma.
Now that his mom's not eating pesticide pills anymore.
Yes. Over at the UEO safe house that is definitely just a hospital.
So, but this conversation continues with Piccolo's feelings about cryonics as a field.
Oh, yeah. He thinks it's fucking weird.
It's weird, it's unnatural, and he has a bit of superstition in his pocket to support this. Because the first ever person successfully thawed out and cured of the illness they went on ice for in the first place is hailed as a hero in Lucas's mind. He was a regular on the talk show circuit until an air conditioner fell out of a window on his head and killed him stone dead.
Yes. And Tony is like, karma!
Karma.
Karma! You can't cheat death!
NCIS doesn't exist in this world, but the Final Destination series does. Death will come for you.
I'm not driving behind a truck with trees. Nope. Nope, nope, nope. I will pass that thing going 90 miles an hour.
That's how death gets you!
No, because I'm going to be in front of the truck and not behind it. The tree's not getting me.
When you're going 90 miles an hour, something else is going to happen that you weren't expecting because it wasn't in the movie. It's real life.
I'm never driving behind a tree truck. Nope.
Mm-mm. But yes, in the UEO safe hospital. It's like a safe house and a hospital.
Yeah. The hot mom's asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Brody's at her side. Ortiz and Dagwood pop in to say, hey, we found your safe house, I guess.
How safe is it? Did they swim? Did they send a second helicopter?
And Dagwood's like, why is your mom young? This is weird. And Brody's like, well, she's going to be 46 in April. And I'm like, dang, how old was she when she had you, dude? Wait, what? I'm like doing the math over here.
Like, she talks about going down to the swimming hole.
Yeah.
Like, during their college exams.
Yes.
Little Brody is in those memories.
He's like four.
She got teen pregnant in high school by choice. She wanted to be a mom so bad.
From a sperm bank.
A sperm bank gave samples to a sophomore. What are you doing?
I feel...
This episode is cracked.
I feel like they wrote this as something of like, they originally were writing this as her like getting teen pregnant normally, right? Yeah. But then they were like, well, we can't do that. We want it to be like this other, you know, we don't want it to be a teen pregnancy. So we're going to make it where he's like, you know, donated sperm and like she wanted to be a mom and all these things to really like blah, blah, blah. But then they forgot to remove and like adjust ages.
So she's like 15?
She's like a 15-year-old showing up to the sperm bank being like, hey, I really want to be a mom.
Here's my babysitting money and like a bunch of quarters on the counter.
And like,
what are you doing?
Like, my little man, I'm so glad your grandparents took care of you. They definitely fully supported my teen pregnancy from the sperm bank.
Well, someone had to sign the papers. I guess they did.
What the fuck?
How impatient are you, hot mom?
Because, like, everything else in this episode, too, like, for a while, you also think, like, he's a child of rape.
Right.
Right? Like, that also seems like the way it's gonna go. And they're also like, no, that's not it.
No.
It's also not like I hooked up with a dude and he left us. And, like...
No, there's only one tragedy. There's a one tragedy maximum. That's it.
It's so confused. It's like five people wrote it and no one read each other's work. It's like when you're like, we're going to do a one sentence story and we're going to pass it around and you can only read the sentence that comes before yours. You can't read the four sentences before that. So you just have to figure it out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Jesus. Because I'm like, I'm just thinking like, okay, how old is Brody supposed to be?
Sure, sure.
Two.
But I do enjoy Dagwood's fistful of wildflowers from someone's yard.
Yes.
Like, this bundle is half grass.
Yes. I also, so Ortiz is also like, yeah, dude, like, you know, we Cubans don't like to say goodbye to anyone. So, like, everyone gets cryoed.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
not weird. I got, like, 12 ants.
I appreciate this, like, engagement with the sci-fi element. You're going to introduce this into the world. You got to ask questions like, how do various cultures impact this technology? How is the institution of the family affected by something like widespread availability of cryonics? All right. You're doing the genre. Congratulations.
Yeah. And, like, we've already heard, like, okay, Tony thinks it's weird. And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, all these different other opinions, and so now we're hearing the, like, positive of, like, mm-hmm, oh, yeah, this mm-hmm. is just a part of, like, our culture now at this point. This is what people do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, a little world building there.
And since he is off duty and off the ship, Ortiz is, of course, wearing his Kangol hat.
Yes, obviously.
Naturally. So Ortiz says his goodbyes, and now it's Brody and Dagwood just having a little one-on-one. And I appreciate Dagwood asking Brody, how come everyone keeps telling you what to do? Because he has observed people telling Brody to get rest, telling him to eat meals, telling him all these things he has to do to take care of himself, because he's not doing that because of mom problems.
Yes. And so he's like, oh, it's because, you know, they care. Dagwood is like, well, you get a lot of rest.
Very emphatic.
Damn it.
Jabbing his finger. Yeah.
Yeah. Aww,
he cares, too.
And almost forgets to leave the flowers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so Brody's like, hey, Dagwood, the flowers. And so he brings them back and, like, hands them to Brody. He's like, they're for her. They're not for you.
All right, big fella. So Lucas is, yes, de-scrambling this brain scan image. Again, this is a Fringe episode before there was Fringe.
Yes, so he has, like, one last thing to try to enhance it, to get a clear image, and he does, and it works, and then he's like, oh, shit!
Oh,
Captain,
fuck.
Get the fuck down
here!
Oh, my
God!
And so Bridger rushes in, and Ford rushes in, and what they see is an image of young General Frank Thomas.
That explains everything. Oh my God.
And so Bridger radios Brody and is like, where's your mom? And he's like, oh, she's in her room asleep. And he's like, go fucking check on her. And he opens the door and no one's there.
Because Brody was in the hallway and somehow she got taken out through the glass brick wall.
Where we are seeing lots of helicopter, like, turbine whooshes through the glass.
I've never seen glass brick open like a window. No. How did this happen?
No. It's so dumb. And then we go to where the helicopter is, and she has been shoved unconscious into the helicopter right next to the general mm-hmm. and to the evil cryo dude who, like, punched out that doctor at the beginning of the episode.
Yes, yes, the guy running the facility, yes.
And so they helicopter away, and back on the Sequest, they're trying to reach Brody more. And O'Neill's like, oh, he must have his pal turned off or something.
Mm-hmm,
which is
mm-hmm.
this the first time they refer to as a pal?
Maybe. It might be.
I just feel like we haven't heard that, like, because that's the term I always think of from it. But I was like, I don't know if they've actually used that before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Especially, like, we've kind of always talked, like, they have their communication devices.
Yes.
But they don't always have them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they've ever actually referred to it that way.
Well, it's called a PAL. Now we know.
If they didn't, they are now. It's mm-hmm, kind of like mm-hmm. the laser gun. It's going to be around a lot.
It's going to be around
a lot. The term's going to be around a lot.
So this helicopter lands in the lawn of General Thomas Frank's estate.
Yes.
His great big general mansion.
And inside, the general is talking to this cryo dude, like, oh man, I should have called the police that night instead of you. And he's like, yeah, but you didn't, bitch. You called me because you couldn't upset your daddy.
So what had happened all these years ago is General Thomas Frank's father was a very powerful man in the United States who dreamed of becoming president. And part of that dream is making sure your weird fuck-up son doesn't ruin your public image.
Yeah.
Including if he accidentally kills a woman down at the swimming hole.
Yes.
So this was all a great big cover-up. It's Chappaquiddick is what it is.
Yeah.
They're doing Chappaquiddick.
Yeah.
But with a generation remove instead of the actual senator.
And the cryo dude also gave Brody's hot mom some eye drops that gave her the virus that then put her into a coma. Mm-hmm. So she couldn't, like,
so she'd go on ice and would never, ever be able to be a witness.
Yeah.
And as out of his guilt, as a sort of personal penance, General Frank has been protecting and providing for the Brody boy his entire life.
He says.
His gifted, touched career is a gift from the brass, actually. This explains so much.
The cryo dude is like, don't take credit for him and his career.
He's actually super cool, actually. He's awesome.
So in the yard.
Yeah.
Apparently all this time, Brody has been dangling under the helicopter by a carabiner. He got flown. He somehow got out there fast enough, hooked on, got flown to this mansion, just dangling, and has just been hanging out in the yard.
Because he is that good. He's super awesome and cool.
So he unhooks himself. He turns his pal on so it makes a beeping noise, mm-hmm. which distracts one of the security dudes to come check it out. And then he, fucking karate kicks him, knocks him out, turns off the pal, which was just enough time for O'Neill to get a signal on them so they can trace him. Mm-hmm. And then he starts going fucking, Rambo, jumping over rails and shit.
Brody the one-man army going commando to save his mommy. He runs up on the roof. He's dodging bullets.
And he's, climbing in windows and shit. And what I love is, the dude from the dock comes around a corner and, Brody fires at him and he fires at him and, climbs up.
The assassin from way in the beginning, yeah.
Okay, and so, Cryo Dude radios out, what's going on? And he's just like, he's on the roof! But, doesn't specify who? This is the first that they've seen that he,
he is.
That someone got in. They don't know how. Mm-hmm. They don't know who.
They can guess.
They can guess, but I just, he's on the roof. Who? Who's on the roof? Pizza guy? What are we talking about?
But the general knows it must be that Brody boy.
I mean, eventually we see that they do have security cameras. That's true. Look at them yet. Brody knocks down another dude, gets inside the building. The power gets cut, though, before they can, watch him too long mm-hmm, on the security mm-hmm. cameras. And the cryo dude is, cocking his gun. And Frank is, the general. It's like, he's a lieutenant in my army. I can't kill him.
Excuse me, sir. It's a Navy.
I know.
What is this?
And the other dude's like, well, it's okay, I'm gonna go kill him. It's fine.
Why does Brody even need Brody boys? He's solid fucking Snake. He is destroying this installation.
So the general goes into the bedroom when Hot Mom wakes up mm-hmm. and she, freaks out because she's seeing the face of her nightmares, and he covers her mouth so she doesn't scream, makes her get up. Ford and Ortiz and a bunch of dudes bust in. Ford and Ortiz, arms out.
Yeah.
Muscles ablazing with the widest fucking stance I would say ever, but Ford's gonna top this later. Ford's gonna do a fucking grand plié. In another scene.
Heroic manspreading to establish dominance over the field of battle.
It's a wide stance, boy. You're not going to be knocked over. You got it.
And so yes, they have actual guns, real pistols for this, not the laser pistols for the chase scene.
Ortiz has the worst action run ever. I love that boy, but his action run is so bad.
How would you describe his run?
Flailing. Flailing about. It's so okay, the overdramatic of their wide stances is sure. What he does with the running. It's so much. I also love that everyone else that came with them gets sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
They do not.
No.
They are in tank tops.
That's how you know they're the heroes.
The heroes!
The guns are out and the balls are breathing. That's how you know.
Problem. They both got some rashes going on. There's some chafing, trying to make sure things don't rub anymore.
So yes, there is chasing and shouting, and eventually the cryo man tries to escape, but Ortiz is in his path. He's got him. He tries to run back out the door he came in, and Ford's right behind him. Mm-hmm. Dun dun dun. They got him.
So Brody follows the general out of the house. The general's dragging his mom to a boat to get away.
No pants.
She has no pants.
She has no.
She's just
no
in
pants.
Like a long sleep shirt.
Yes.
The general shoves her onto the boat, and Brody shines a rifle flashlight at him, and general's got a gun on his mom, and he's like, "We can talk about this. This was an accident.
I'm your commanding officer, young man." Yeah, yeah. And big shouty standoff.
Tony jumps up out of the water.
Yeah, that's how we break the impasse. Fish boy emerges.
He does like a dolphin leap. Does a little.
So here we see Brody destroying his surrogate father shortly after asking to marry his mother. This is the most Oedipal episode of television you could contrive.
And Ford rushes in to do that grand plié stance.
This is how he intimidates his prey, by flashing his gigantic balls.
If you did, like... the biggest, like, horse stance, grand plié stance, but then, like, squatted at the same time. Like, it looks like he's trying to take a shit over the largest, like, pit toilet ever.
I've seen less flexible stances at the Shaolin Temple. Like, this is amazing.
The thighs this man must have to hold this stance.
And that's why he's coming back for Sequest Legacy.
Okay, so this is a good time to bring it up, and I forgot I didn't bring it up earlier.
Okay.
While
we're talking about Jonathan Ford's crotch, yes.
Future Sequest, okay?
Okay.
So, there is an entire 30, I want to say episodes, because they wrote them as episodes. There is a fan fiction out there.
Sure.
That is written as season 4.
Okay.
With a jump.
Okay.
And it's like... another, like, 20 years in the future.
Okay.
With Lucas.
So this thing I'm imagining already exists.
It already exists. And, like, these people actually wrote it as episodes.
Okay.
It's a full fucking season of episodes.
Sure.
Out there. I've read it all. It is Lucas as the captain.
Okay. I don't like it, but okay.
It's... really interesting because it introduces a lot of new characters. It also has him talk with a lot of characters, and it deals with what they also know of what didn't happen in season 3.
Mm-hmm.
So like stuff that ended in season 3 and like, or they like episodes never got written.
Right.
It takes some of that and develops those plot points farther.
Sure, sure.
And like, it is like fully fucking thought out and developed. It is very interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then there are people who then wrote fan fictions inspired by it.
Of course.
So then you have full additional episodes of this,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
like, you know, season that never existed. It is so much fucking time went into that shit.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
I can't believe I forgot to, like, mention that earlier. It's, hold on. It was Sequest 2047.
Okay, sure.
That's what they did it as, is 2047. Yeah. Anyways, that's a thing. There's a lot out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's good shit. Anyways, getting back to this one.
Yes.
So,
So the raid is successful. The day is saved. The culprits have been apprehended. And we rejoin Hot Mama Brody, being consulted about the possibility of RNA antiviral treatments.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Basically, Wendy's like, well, I can't tell you when, but we're close.
We're a lot closer to a cure than we were when you went in the first time.
Yeah, like, technology's advancing. It should happen. It shouldn't take 100 years. Brody should still be alive. Yeah.
So yes, she is going to go back on ice and wait again for her cure to see her little man again and live a life alongside him. Perhaps as his daughter wife, mom?
My little man. I fucking hate it. fucking hate it. Could have been worse. She could have been like, but you're not so little anymore. Ugh. Ugh. You know, he's all like, yo, thanks for going back in, Mom. This will be good. And she's like, oh, like, you know, I didn't know what I'd have before. That's why I didn't want it. But now I know.
She's got something to be resurrected for. Yeah.
And so the ending scene is Brody putting a yellow rose on her cryo chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's her mom's favorite flower, I guess. That's mentioned earlier.
I guess.
It's not her favorite flower. I'm not.
I hope this is the same pod and therefore their family general practitioner got rescued.
Right?
What happened with that guy?
Right? And so that's the end of the episode, except for the fish facts.
Yes, Kathy Evisom, Lonnie Henderson herself, has a fish on a stick because she is there at SeaWorld to feed the sharks.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that only a handful of shark species have ever attacked people?
Yeah, that's what they tell me.
Did you know that sharks do not have bones? They have cartilaginous skeletons?
Yeah, it's fucking cool.
And some of the properties of their weird, messed up bodies have made them the subject of cancer research.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Very interesting.
Darlin, do you have a fish fact?
Yeah. So, hammerhead sharks.
Yeah.
They are the symbol of SeaQuest for some reason.
Yeah.
Not the dolphin or, I don't know, kind of the squid that the boat looks like.
Kind of a cuttlefish shape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hammerhead, though.
Yeah. It's in the logo. It's in the set now in season 2.
Yeah. So, they are found worldwide. They definitely prefer warm waters.
Mm-hmm.
Some swim in large schools during the day and then hunt alone at night, which is different for many sharks. And the largest species of hammerhead shark, the great hammerhead, is about an average of 13 feet and weighing about 500 pounds, while the smallest species of hammerhead is only 5 feet in length, 24 pounds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Very big size difference. Now, while trying to look up this fish fact, I was like, after I just looked up hammerhead shark, I was like, hammerhead shark SeaQuest. Because I was like, maybe I can find out like why they decided to go with the hammerhead. I didn't.
I think I know this.
Well, I didn't find that.
Okay.
But I found like a very, very, very long article from 1993 with the LA Times, which I sent to you to like read later.
Yeah.
But one thing I thought was interesting was there was a quote in it that has nothing to do with the hammerhead. I just thought this was, the only reason this article came up in the Google search was because they talked about what's his name?
Roy Scheider?
No, guy that no longer does these end things.
Oh, Bob Ballard.
Yeah, they talked about Bob Ballard putting like a SeaQuest hat on and how it had like the hammerhead shark. That is how this ended up in Google search. Someone mentioned hammerhead shark. Okay. But it was a quote from Roy Scheider talking about the character of Bridger and how, you know, he had his qualms about the character because he's like, if it's just a submarine captain, then you don't really need me to be that. I don't want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
But if the guy in time could become a cross between Jacques Cousteau and Popeye, it might be a character worth some time. Jacques Cousteau because of the science and exploration involved, and Popeye because he's an eccentric.
Uh-huh.
I want a guy who's really sort of unpredictable, who's a professional nuclear submarine captain, but whose obsession is science and geology, just like Bob Ballard. And I thought that was a fun quote.
Like, ocean hobo, to be or not to be Bridger. I can see the eccentric he's asking for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't come out much.
No.
No.
But I think that's it. Because that's from like when. That's from like early on in the show being made. We're so like.
Development days. Early for filming.
So you're talking like this is what he was attached to from the character.
The hopes.
Did not really happen.
Yeah.
Getting very interesting article. Very long.
Do you want to hear my perhaps erroneous memory of why the hammerhead?
Sure.
I don't remember where I read this, so it might be entirely false. This is, I'm not claiming fact. This is just what I think I remember reading somewhere at some point.
Okay.
Early on, the Sequest, the ship, was meant to be designed as a hammerhead, but as it went through like a vague hammerhead shape, but as it went through iterations and development, it obviously didn't end up that way. But the logo was already approved and locked in by that point.
And then they were like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. So what's your fish fact?
My fish fact is about cryonics. The very first person to be cryopreserved upon their death was James Bedford. This occurred in the year 1967.
Okay.
This person actually doing the thing that had been theoretical started a small trend. Dozens or even a few hundred in the next few years would follow. However, James Bedford's remains are the only one from before the, say, the mid-70s to still remain on ice. His remains have been kept in a number of places, hopping all over the place, including a 5-year stint just being held by his family in liquid nitrogen.
Oh, okay. Yep, just there on the shelf, you know.
His remains are currently held by the Alcor Life Extension Foundation, also home to baseball legend Ted Williams, probably the most famous person in cryonic preservation, and TV writer-producer Dick Clare, who won a few Emmys writing for The Carol Burnett Show, so you know I'm a fan. and his freezing was like part of a landmark case that in the California courts that won people the right to be preserved cryonically.
Okay.
Like, against their family. If it's in your will, your family doesn't get to say, no, you don't.
Yeah.
So there you go. James Bedford. Maybe someday they'll try to wake you up and figure out that that's not how death works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except in the second season of Fringe.
There you go.
But those people are like weird Mercury cyborgs. It's a different situation. Yeah.
Also, like, why would you want to come back? Like, man.
Because now they can cure your super virus.
Yeah, but like, y'all didn't think about what the world's going to fucking be like. I don't.
One thing that this episode doesn't cover is that, in reality at least, you have to be medically and legally dead to be cryonically frozen.
Yeah.
You are betting on them not only figuring out how to fix the thing that killed you, but also the death in the first place.
Yes.
Yes. And that's before the money runs out to keep you on ice all that time. And that they froze you in such a way that those things would be resuscitated. Like, the whole thing is fake. The whole thing is weird fake quackery. It can make for a fun story, though. And it can also make for a story where your son really wants to get with you, and then when he can't, decides to say you look like you're 12.
Don't fucking hit on her to begin with, then! Fucker.
This. I half like this episode. I think this episode.
Is it because that's how he remembers her looking? Like, what is she actually, like, 15?
This episode has, like, some stuff that really could have thrived if it weren't for the stuff that's really dumb and bad. Like, I appreciate if you're going to introduce a sci-fi element. Yeah, how does that shape the world? What are a lot of different, like, perspectives about it? It does that so much more successfully than this writer's previous episode, The Aliens Come Back.
Yeah.
That was a mess. I didn't like that at all. But then you've also got stuff like, yeah, no one checked a timeline at all.
No. No one thought, 46? Well, I'm just like, okay, are we over here trying to say, like, she, his mother, before being frozen was 46? Absolutely not. We're not saying that. Like...
All right, if this is taking place in the year 2019, she's turning 46. That means she was born in 1973. That means she was frozen in the year 1999 at age 16? What? Quick correction. Did you catch that mistake? It's 26. Hot Mama Brody was frozen at age 26. Still weird, though. Lieutenant Brody's birth was placed in 1993, meaning his mother was so desperate for a little man, she went to the sperm bank before really having a chance to try the old-fashioned way. This story is still lunacy. I now return you to the conversation made with its original mathematical misapprehension. And Brody was, like, out of diapers at minimum.
So he's remembering that he was born when she was 12.
What is this? Please.
I just went to the sperm bank when I was 12 and said, inseminate me.
How hard is it to have a little desk calculator when you're writing your fucking television? What are you doing? And then, yeah, for Brody to be hitting on a 16-year-old in a bar. You know what? She doesn't look 16. She looks like she could get in.
Who looks like she's 32. Which is why it also doesn't work to be like, oh, she's 46 and, you know, had him at 40. Like, no, that also doesn't work.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. So that's Sequest. Mm-hmm. That is Sequest.
Also, these flashbacks that she had, uh-huh. like, of her at this, like, watering hole, mm-hmm. swimming.
Down at the creek.
He's there, too.
Yes!
And so does that mean he saw this woman die?
Yes, he saw this woman die!
Like, what the fuck? Oh my gosh. What an episode.
What an episode. thank you all for joining us. Sorry about the impromptu break. There will be a promptu one coming up, so get used to it.
Life, y'all. Yeah. So if you enjoyed this episode, you know what you can do? You can go leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to us. And mm-hmm. if you give us a 5-star... review, we might read it.
Thank you very much to everyone who has and those who will in the future. I cannot wait to read yours on mic.
You should also tell your friends.
Tell your friends about the show, how much you enjoy it, and how nice it is that we gave you time to get current mm-hmm. after you spoke to us at C2E2 2025.
Yeah.
Yeah, think about it. That's mm-hmm. what it is. Yeah.
You can also follow us on Blue Sky mm-hmm. at Whiskers, WSKRS.
.bisky.social. Hell yeah, brother.
I just want to point out that watching this after having, like, made my Sequest jumpsuits and having more time with them,
yeah.
mine looks so fucking good.
They look really, really
They look
good.
Like they could go on the show.
Yeah, like, they are not, because of the raw material you were working with,
mm-hmm.
like, they are not perfect one-to-one.
No, like, they are cut differently.
You could walk around in the background,
I
hell yeah.
I could be in the background and no one would bat an eye.
No one would know.
They're so good. Just don't zoom in. The zipper's off.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the right zipper. I might read you that one day. We'll see.
So, anyhow.
With that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.